Warning, this episode contains foul language. Always check the description of the episode for a more detailed list of episode-specific trigger warnings.
Listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, creepy, disturbing, questionable, outlandish, mysterious, and everything in between. Each episode, we come together from across the country and we talk about something weird.
Weird.
And today, of course, is no exception. We are both covering some strange and maybe a bit dark topics that are revealing some disgusting things about our world and maybe even ourselves. We are spitting some ugly truth, but it's all very fascinating, bizarre, and perfectly weird, just like us and all of you, our listeners and weirdos. We are so happy to be back, season 8, so honored that you are along for the ride on another season, so let's dive into our wild stories for the day, shall we? My name is Lauren, and this is my lovely co-host, Ashley.
What's up, weirdos?
Hey.
Hey.
Season 8.
Season 8.
Season 8.
This is going to be a dark episode, we've learned.
Sorry about it.
Sorry. I'm sharing one of the most disturbing stories I've ever read. But I also – and, like, I had something that I wanted to share with you that I recently learned that is horrifying that I tried to share in my all-company meeting yesterday. But, like, no one wanted to hear it. And, like, I
get that you tried to share it at work. Oh, my gosh.
Like, literally.
Okay. They weren't ready.
We were in this meeting, and it was a six-hour-long meeting. It was so long. And we have them every quarter. And no one was, like, talking for a while. Like, people were just sort of, like, we had ended. We were, like, and transitioning into a new topic. And I was, like, I learned something really horrifying recently. If anyone wants to hear it, let me know. Like, to the room. And, like, one woman, my coworker Tracy, was like, I don't want to hear anything horrifying. And I was like, well, that's why I asked. Like, I just – I don't want to, like, just
come
out.
That is so nice of you. Yeah. You could have just, like, jumped into it and people aren't ready.
And she said, no thanks. And I said, okay, bye. But
protect your peace.
This is my safe space.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready for it. This is the weirdo safe space. Please continue.
I'm prepared. So you know how when people climb Mount Everest, there's usually a couple markers on the mountains that are dead bodies of people who died attempting to climb Mount Everest. There's like a famous guy with like green boots. He's like the green boot man. And that's how you know you're X amount of kilometers away from the top, whatever.
Right.
Apparently, because of our changing climate, whether that's climate change or not, the snow is melting. And now the path to the top of Mount Everest is littered with bodies.
No.
More and more bodies. Now you can see the entire man.
You can see.
You used to only be able to like see his boots and like that.
So you can see all of Green Boot Man.
His whole body is pretty much uncovered right now because the snow has melted and way more bodies. So if you decide to make that trip, like not only do you need to do the physical training to train yourself to like breathe in that atmosphere because a lot of bad things, a lot of things can go wrong when you're climbing to a height like that. But you also need to like emotionally and psychologically prepare yourself to see dead human beings.
Oh my Lanta. Okay, first of all, I don't know what y'all are trying to prove climbing Mount Everest, because I'm like, so many people die. So many people die. You can't breathe in that air. Like, altitude sickness is already terrible when I go to like Big Bear. Like, yeah, I'm like, why? So what are y'all trying to prove? And also, like, that's the most awful thing I've ever heard. You were so right. Like, so now,
I'm so sorry, but I had to.
There's so many more bodies than we ever even imagined.
Yeah. So you will likely see anywhere from like 12 to 30 human bodies on your trek to the top. So
cool.
Enjoy your hike.
Great. Luckily, that is not a journey that I will ever take, because I don't even like hiking.
I don't have to
in
worry
Los
about
Angeles.
This.
Like, I'm not going to do Runyon Canyon. So I'm like, nope.
That was like,
don't have to worry about me.
So I didn't love hiking in Los Angeles either, but it was only because like you have to drive through traffic to get to the place to park
to get to a hiking spot. Hike.
So yes, it was just
it
like
just
even
be where you can walk.
You should you should be able to, like, if you're going to take a hike, you should be able to leisurely drive there.
Take a hike.
Leisurely walk. Yeah. No worries, whatever. And so, like, the benefits of the hike just, like, didn't really outweigh the trouble of, like, getting to the hike. So it was correct. Like, when I moved to Illinois, I'm going to hike, like, every – I have not hiked once. I have lived here for 2 years.
I was about to say, are you a hiker now?
No.
No, absolutely.
It turns out it wasn't the traffic that was stopping me from hiking. It was myself.
It's the hike. It is.
It's the hike.
It's the hike. Yeah.
So
we're not into it. That's terrible.
Yeah, sorry.
Hate it. Love it. I mean,
but thank you for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing. This is always a safe space for terrifying news updates, stories. And today is a perfect example, because Ashley and I are both going dark. But oopsie poopsie. But before Ashley really makes us depressed, mine is a little lighter, so we're going to, like, warm you up. And it's a new segment that we're bringing
I'm
to season
so excited.
8. But, like, a perfect segment for us. So yeah. It's still, like, we're still working on it, and, like, we're open to suggestions, but here is the intro for the segment that I have so far.
Tom's house was broken into, and he confronted the burglar and then had to go have eye surgery.
You know that it's our time. These are the weirdest days of our lives.
It's all about the pasta. Ooh,
we've got more honey than any honeybee hive mind. Get crazy, get loud, get crazy, get loud. Cabs
are here!
Let's find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real weird. It's reality TV corner.
Yeah. How dare me?
You came to me.
And I apologize.
Lauren, that was my favorite thing that has happened on this show in a long time. That was so good.
Thank you.
You're
okay,
so welcome.
So it's a good intro.
It's such a good intro that I'm editing in music to it. Like, I'm editing the background music in. I'm putting work into this intro. That was gorgeous. And it's something that you will only understand if you watch Vanderpump Rules, Southern Charm, and Jersey Shore.
Yes.
Oh, and Real World.
And Real World thrown in at the end, which I was like, I think most people will know that
line. Here's the thing. The right audience.
Yes.
You perform that for the right audience.
Incredible. Reality TV corner. So.
Absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much. And obviously. Thank you. No, please be seated. Truly, thank you. So this segment was inspired, first of all, my love for reality TV. Duh, we all know it. But, like, it's an addiction. But also, like, that Ashley has been brought into this world. You already were a reality TV watcher, but now you're like, you've gone
you know
off
what?
The deep end with me.
I was a huge reality TV watcher, but I had never gone to Bravo. Bravo.
That's exactly right.
Is what you invited MTV. Me. Mm-hmm. MTV, whatever like what 90 Day Fiancé was on. What was
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
On?
What is that? Like either TLC or.
TLC. Yeah. Or Travel Channel. One of those. Weird. Yeah. So, like, I love reality TV. I've watched reality TV since the introduction of reality TV, but the Bravo universe is a treat.
Mm-hmm. The Bravoverse actually finally came to the dark side. And. Basically, during our hiatus, I feel like there were so many times where we'd be like, I miss you. Like, that's the joy of recording is like, we don't get to talk as much, but what kept us connected was us chatting about reality TV and catching up on all of the trash. And she fully watched Southern
Charm. Favorite characters.
Charm. I know. Yes. All of our favorites. So it just felt right that we bring a reality TV segment in. And we've said for years that we wanted to do like a reality TV episode. And reality TV is so fascinating, really, absolutely. Because like the people on it are so interesting. You sent a TikTok that one day about why Tom Sandoval is like a perfect person to be on reality TV because mm-hmm. of his narcissism and other things. He's a bit unstable.
It's
but like
literally that, like a psychological experiment. Like if you are into reality TV, I'm sure you can be into it just to be a person who likes like drama or whatever, but like it's like studying human behavior. As long as it's not like a super, you know, obviously there are reality TV shows that are extremely scripted and those aren't fun, you know, like they're not fun to watch, but boy, oh boy.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like the people on them are so fascinating and like you can, you know, study like the psychological things going on with them, but also us as people, like why do we enjoy consuming it so much? What does it say about us? Like there is a darkness to us as well, but it's just such a fascinating thing. And I wanted to like, because there are so many different angles you can take with reality TV, that's why I think this segment can live on and on for so long. But I wanted to introduce it today talking about, I went to a Reddit thread and somebody had asked the question that I was going to Reddit to ask. So I was like, thanks for doing the work for me. But somebody asked, like, what have been some of the most like problematic reality shows in history? Because like, obviously we talk about like the Housewives of Vanderpump all the time, but like, what was a reality show that like was rough and should not have happened? And two kept popping up in this thread over and over. And it was The Swan and Kid Nation.
Which? Think I know Kid Nation, but I don't think I've ever heard of The Swan.
And see, I was
I've never
the opposite.
Seen like, either of them, but I think I know what you're going to say about Kid Nation, but please tell me.
So yeah, these were questionable for many reasons, but I was the opposite. I had not even heard of Kid Nation. When I looked it up, I was like, who allowed this to be on television? The Swan, I am guilty of watching, which again, it's like, then it makes me look inside and think, why did I like this so much? Like, I loved it. It was basically Extreme Home Makeover, but for a person. It was a like surgical procedure makeover on women who were competing to be in like a Miss America type pageant. But it was women competing with each other to even be considered to then go on a pageant. So it was like they would get plastic surgery, all this stuff done to themselves. And if the judges were like, nah, the other girl's prettier, then they wouldn't even go on to be on the pageant. They just like went through these crazy life-changing surgeries just to like go home. Then
that
after
is insane.
That. I know.
What network?
It was on, what was it on? CBS, I think.
CBS.
Oh, I know. CBS has been awful quiet. Let's see. Beedly doop pop beep. Oh, no, it was on Fox. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Kid Nation was on CBS. That's what I was getting mixed up. Okay, so The Swan. It was a reality show that came out in 2004. It only lasted for two seasons before it was shut down because everyone was like,
before
this
it was
might
shut
be bad.
Down.
They're like, we have to. We
before
can't
the
do this
federal
anymore.
Government came in and shut it down.
And they shut it down. So in 2004, Fox premiered The Swan, and it started with 16 women all hoping to make it to the grand pageant at the end. And the show's voiceover said, this was how, like, the show was described. A group of ordinary women hand over their lives to a team of cosmetic and plastic surgeons. Put through brutal three-month makeovers, they are fighting for the chance to become beauty queens. Each week, two contestants will be transformed, but only one will be judged beautiful enough to move on to the pageant.
Holy shit. When you first described it, I was awful. Like, well, that's what Queer Eye does. But no.
No.
That is not what Queer Eye does.
No, it is not what Queer Eye does.
Queer Eye, like, comes in and is like, you're beautiful just the way you are, but, like, let's show you how to dress for your body type. Like, let's show you how to dress it up a little bit. Like, they're not like, hey, we need to fix that fucking nose.
Totally
you
change
monster.
You. Yeah, you beast. I know. They are, beast. Like, so wholesome and saying, like, also, we're going to, like, walk you through some, like, things in your lifestyle that you want to change, and, like, we're gonna help you call your dad who you haven't spoken to in 10 years, you know, like, they're the sweetest. And these people, literally, like, you were just making a joke about, like, being a hideous monster, literally they were coming on the show, and all of the judges and the, you know, the whole makeover team are like, so here's all the reasons you are so ugly, and here's what we're gonna take, like,
and here's what
made them
do.
Feel so bad about themselves. Yeah, and, like, they were just coming in. The women, too, like, their stories were so sad, because they would come on the show and just, they were like, I've always been ugly. Like, my husband doesn't think I'm attractive anymore. Like, everyone has told me I'm ugly my whole life. Like, I need, like, just heartbreaking people. And then, yeah, the team is coming in and making them feel worse. And then in some of the situations, like, they were giving, like, husbands and partners bad edits. Like, one of the stories, it showed a husband saying, like, yeah, my wife has always been average, but apparently he was, like, coaxed into saying that, but, like, followed it up. I mean, maybe the husband was totally lying and he was a piece of shit, but it, in an interview, he did make it seem like he was genuine, and he was like, I was calling my wife beautiful and I love her the way she is. I was trying to say that she has always felt like an average Joe, and she always felt like she was in the middle, but they edited out me saying she was beautiful and just gave me an edit of saying she's average. So, like, all of America is tearing him a new one. They ended up getting a divorce, like, months later, and it turns out, like, most of these situations from the show ended in divorce and, like, people just having, like, all out brawls after this because of the edits they got. But one little reality TV crossover, Dr. Terry Dubrow, who is on Real Housewives, he's on Botched also. That's where he got his start with plastic surgery on the show, Botched on E. But also he was with Heather Dubrow on Real Housewives of Orange County. Mm-hmm. So little reality TV crossover there.
Wait, was he one of the surgeons?
He was one of the surgeons. So that now I'm kind of like, Terry.
Terry.
Come on.
If I remember correctly, I never really cared too much for Terry Dubrow.
No. I'm not into him.
On The Real Housewives. So this sounds pretty.
It's,
yeah.
It tracks.
Yeah, this tracks. This makes sense.
Yes, he was one of the surgeons. Also, someone named Dr. Randall Hayworth. They were both on there. And then there was also a therapist who would talk to the women, which are like, okay, good. Like, we do need the therapy part of this. But it turned out when people dug deeper into the therapist, she was certified on an online accreditation program.
Oh, well, and here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But maybe if you're casting for a show of this caliber and you're putting these women through these, like, physically altering surgeries, you should get someone who went to an accredited university, possibly.
Yes. It just felt like she got her certification in, like, a couple weeks, and they were like, welcome. No, and that might not be true, but it just was like, come on.
Come
like,
on,
these
guys.
Women need more.
We need Dr. Phil.
We need Dr. Phil here right now. Yeah, so just going through the ringer, like, sometimes having, like, 3, 4, 5 surgeries, like, this brutal process. And then in their recovery, they were not allowed to look in a mirror once until their reveal day, when, like, they were fully healed and could come before the judges and then be told either you're beautiful or, like, try again next time,
this
and not sent
horrifying.
On to the final pageant. horrifying. Like every woman who came off of the show, I think there was like one good story. There was one girl who was interviewed after and she's like, hey, like I would have gotten these surgeries anyway. Like I'm fine. Like I got to go on to the pageant. Like I didn't win, but like I feel great. And so good for her. But so many of the other women are like, nope, like I've been in therapy ever since. Two women like refuse to leave their house still to this day. Like this was on in 2004 and they're like, I don't go outside. I'm agoraphobic. Like I am like, I got a divorce. Like I live alone. I am a hermit. I stay inside. Like it has destroyed relationships, like made self-esteem worse, like led to so many mental health issues. Nobody followed up with these women. I think that's the hardest part is like they had therapy during the show, but then it's like it just drops off so fast. And some of the women had health issues after the surgeries that just like nobody cared about. Nobody checked in with them. It was horrifying. So it was canceled after two seasons. I do remember watching it again. This is why I'm like, I have to look deep inside my own heart because I do remember like being so excited for the reveal because similar to like on Queer Eye or like Extreme Home Makeover, like I get excited about the houses too. You do want to see how they changed and seeing a before and after is exciting. Like I do enjoy a transformation. However, I did not know what was going on behind the scenes. And also, I don't think I thought about, which again, it was in 2004, so I was young and dumb.
Yeah,
but totally. I wasn't thinking about actually how like sadistic and like horrible this really is to be like putting these women through this. And then one of them is just like sent home at the end of it. And it's like, you already felt bad about yourself. And now with this transformation, like hopefully you feel beautiful and a little more confident, but these judges might still look in your eyes and say, nah.
Nah.
Bye.
No, not beautiful enough. Not beautiful enough for this beauty pageant. And you and I, so you have had a little work done. I have had no work done, but we have the same attitude. We have the same attitude towards it where like, I'm not against it at all. I actually like, I'm all about plastic surgery. If there's something about yourself that you've always been like, I've just always wanted like a bigger, you know, cup size, like get a boob job. Like that would be dope.
Get it. Yes.
If I had the extra funds, you know, if I ever had the money, like, maybe I would get a boob job. I don't know. I like my boobs. But I've just never had a problem with it. Mm-mm. The only thing is that I just feel like a lot of the time with excessive plastic surgery, sometimes I just wish that women and men, because I've seen it in men too, you do want them to have some sort of therapy or something because there does come a point where enough has changed about them. And I look at Vanderpump Rules, for example. You look at like Sheena, soon to be Lala, where you're like, hey, girls, I don't know if you know this, but you were more beautiful before you did so much.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch because it's like, what are you doing to your face when it's nose jobs and like chin shavings and lip injections and, you know, facelifts,
like lip injections, like every few months, like which they tell you, like when you go to get, because I've had, again, some filler in my lip, like I have done it and I love it, but it's like they tell you really only need to come once a year, but you can tell that like these women are going like every couple of months and just adding more and more and more. And it, again, to each their own, and
yeah, it's your face, but
it just
want.
It does just get to a point where you're like, oh my god, like your lips are like taking over your entire face now, and like what's going on, what's happening?
What's the end goal is the thing. Like, what is the end goal? I feel like you can get carried away with anything. And
totally.
Obviously, if it's your vibe, do it. You know, some people would say that about tattoos. Like, you have enough tattoos. And it's like, I love the way they look on my body. I'm covering my body with tattoos. And it's like, hey, it's your body. Do what you want. I love it. But, you know, is there something else going on?
Right.
Like, do we need to address something that's maybe just deeper than like vanity?
1,000%. And that, yeah, that's why this is like, this is dangerous and yeah, it's crazy that this was on a reality show. And also, this is a little plug for you all should go back and listen to Botox and the Beast, which was our body modification episode where we dive deeper into like psychology, the mental health things, all about it and when body modifications have like gone too far and gotten dangerous with people. So check it, because that was a great episode.
That was a good episode. I love that segment.
Also, I found an older article like when I was researching this that was talking about the swan and why it was problematic. And I say older because it was talking about how like, yeah, the swan was canceled years ago, but then apparently a new show was supposed to come out in either late 2019 or 2020 called The Surgery, spelled like S-U-R-J-U-R-Y, like jury is okay at the end of it, because there was going to be like a jury or a team, and it was going to be very similar to The Swan, and people were hearing about this and starting to be like, what? Like, I thought we weren't going to do this anymore. It was going to be hosted, I thought this was interesting though, by, it was going to be hosted by Caroline Flack, who was the host of Love Island, who is no longer with us.
She unalived herself?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, I'm saying the story right. Yeah. So I thought that was like a weird, interesting, like reality TV crossover twist that she was going to host it. And yeah, she ended up sadly taking her life. She used to host Love Island, and you know, she was under attack on the internet, on social media, as what happens. And she had some mental health things, and she couldn't take it. But I was just like, wow, like the darkness surrounding like this revival of a show that people were already questioning. And then she was going to be the host. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, it feels like this like curse.
Well, but The Surgery, anyway. RIP The Surgery, not all COVID casualties were a negative thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. But
we didn't get a revival of this show.
Yes. So yeah, that is touching on The Swan, which was a wild one. And then Kid Nation is the other show. So you knew of this show.
I think I know what this show is. Tell me about it and I'll let you know if it is what I'm thinking of.
Okay. So CBS, this is the CBS show, had this show called Kid Nation. It took 40 kids into a desert 8 miles south of Santa Fe, New Mexico. They would spend 40 days in Bonanza City, a 16th century ghost town. And over the 40 days, kids in ages ranging from 8 to 15 years old were divided into this system of 4 different classes: upper class, merchants, cooks, and laborers. And the children's main goal and job was to revitalize this once bustling mining town and create a viable society, just without any help, just kids only putting this together. It was basically, people were calling it like Lord of the Flies,
essentially,
put onto television. Yeah. And each class had daily chores, including making dinner, in which like 10-year-old children had to behead a live chicken. In some cases.
Oh.
Catch and behead a live chicken. Or clean a disgusting outhouse, which had no running water and only was available to the upper classes. Like, basically, you would, like, pee in a pot. Pee and poop in a pot if you weren't in one of the upper classes. And, yeah, they were divided. And there was, like, there was a little government that was formed by some of the kids too, who would like make the laws and like check in on everybody. And they were kind of in charge, and it is batshit crazy. Like that we would do this. 'Cause like, it'd be different if it was monitored a little more closely and like maybe people didn't have to behead a live chicken, but like truly no one was checking in on these kids. They were watching on, you know, screens from afar, and like the camera people who were following them around like would never weigh in. Like, I guess those were really the only adults, was whoever was behind the camera, but it was like, they just held their camera. They didn't say a word. There were so many injuries. There was like dehydration. There was, luckily no one died. Thank God. But I'm like, so much illness, so many injuries. Like, they were put in danger on the daily. Like, why would you send an 8-year-old? Like, the youngest was 8. I, you cannot send an 8-year-old into this situation. You shouldn't send any child into this situation, even the teenagers.
Well,
I feel for, but I'm
for
like,
the love
eight?
Of God, were they orphans? Like, where were their parents? Who signed off
they,
on this?
They
who
signed said, off. Yeah.
Who said that's this is okay for my 8-year-old?
Right. Yeah. That's the other part of this is like they. Parents were warned of the dangers involved with allowing their child to participate. They had to sign a 22-page waiver
and they
promising
were like, we
that
don't
they would
care.
Not sue.
My child's going to be a star on
Put
CBS.
Put it on the TV. CBS, baby. Let's do it. They had to sign a 22-page waiver promising that they would not sue over injuries that happened upon their child, and that included death. They signed off on that they would not
I wouldn't
have a
even
lawsuit
send
if
my
child
cat
died. No. God, I am just like, this is insane. The parents were also told that their children would be confronted with inherently dangerous and uncontrolled hazards, and their children would be exposed to many dangerous things, and they truly were just like, yep, where do I sign? Let's go. And another section of the contract stated that CBS would not be at fault if two participants engaged in an intimate relationship.
Lauren?
I have an eye twitch. I have an eye twitch because I can't.
You're telling me.
I'm telling
that
you.
That the adult camera operators, were not to intervene. Mm-hmm. If there were to be an intimate relationship between two children.
Yes. Because all of the risks listed in the contract included emotional distress, illness, sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, and pregnancy. That was listed. And it was like, nope, don't you do anything. So that was terrible.
Lauren, I didn't know about Kid Nation.
And I was like, is this sounding familiar? Were you a viewer?
No, I didn't know about it. What year was this?
It was, I have to do math because the year isn't listed.
Lauren.
13 years ago from 2020, because I was reading an article from
2007.
2020. Thank you. 2007.
Okay, well, no. Yeah. So the show like, I was thinking I of them? Was similar where, and I don't know the specifics, so I probably shouldn't even fucking talk about it, but the show I was thinking of, they took like 10 boys, boy children and 10 girl children, and like basically put them in the house. The boys were on their own. The girls were on their own.
Yes.
And it was almost like a social experiment. Yeah, where apparently they wanted to see. They were there for like a week or something. And they could sort of like set their own rules. And apparently like the girls had like a great system going where they like cleaned. They thrived. They cooked. They had like resolved issues within them. Like and the boys, the house was like completely destroyed.
Disaster.
There were fights. There was like shit on the walls. Like it was an absolute
And no
disaster.
One is surprised that that's
and no
how
one
it ended.
Was surprised.
Because.
Yeah. Like, was anyone watching like, that's not what I thought was going to happen.
Right. It's because women are superior and we all know it.
Literally as adults. If you were like 10 men live in a house and 10 women live in a house and they're going to be there for 14 days.
Correct.
Let's just see how it unfolds. We know how it's going to unfold. We know what these houses are going to look like when this is over.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so this was totally different. And people, like, again, everyone bought into it. Like, everyone was loving it. There were a lot of parents were angry. I feel like anyone who, like, actually had children, especially children close to this age,
were
angry and, like, calling into the station saying, like, take this off the air immediately. And, like, it was only this, you know, one season. But a lot of people were like, I love this. This is fascinating. This is wild. Like, which, I mean, it is. It's so, I do see why people liked it, as dark as it is. Because you're like, I can't believe these kids are just, like, totally left to their own devices and they're trying to figure it out. But it was ranked 10th on Time Magazine's top 10 new and great TV shows of 2007.
Time.
It was not come on time. It was nominated for Best Family Television Reality Show, the 29th Annual Young Artists Awards. And, you know, it had a revival a couple of years ago. I saw, I think, when people were bored during COVID. That's why I found an article from 2020. All episodes are available on YouTube. And people were like, is anyone watching this train wreck? I can't believe this was allowed on television. It was like hate watching, you know? So obviously it made its moment. People watched it. People gave it, you know, the ratings that it wanted and needed, but it is so wild. I can't believe any parents would sign off on this. I feel like today this would never happen because everybody has anxiety and like wants to put their kid in a bubble, but I'm like, this once existed and CBS.
I just feel like, you know, I'm about to tell a story that involves like CIA secret government. You know, they've done some fucked up stuff. They've done some fucked up stuff with United States soldiers, with poor people, with Black people in the South, mental health patients. Like the CIA has done some really horrific things, studies, you know, experiments on American people. And I feel like even they wouldn't do this to children. And they're monsters.
So let's all listen to Ashley's story and remember that at the end of this episode, how terrible that Kid Nation
and
was.
Remember that CBS is worse than the CIA.
CBS or CIA, you decide.
You decide who's worse.
Yeah, that's wild. But wow. I'm excited for more reality TV corner in our lives.
Same. I have the perfect guest for us. We should do an episode where we just do some crazy reality TV stories. There's been a lot of really horrific and scary and weird things that's happened on reality TV. And my friend Erin was actually on a spoof show called Burning Love. Do you remember Burning Love?
Yes, of course.
She was one of the contestants on Burning Love, and she actually hosts a really great bachelor podcast.
Oh yeah, is
called
it
The
Aaron?
Final Rose. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, we've been wanting to have her on.
I know,
so long,
this is the year. We should just do it. Okay. So today, this segment that I'm going to be doing today is very simple. It is called
Declassified.
Are they listening? Did you hear that? Who was it?
Who's there?
Okay, today I'm going to teach you all about a man named Jolly.
Jolly?
Jolly. Trigger warning. Really horrific. You'll never trust the government again. Also, there's a murder involved, but it's a very small piece of the puzzle. The victim's family, I assume, is still alive. I'm not going to go into the details of the crime or name the victim. As with all of our episodes, links will be provided in the description. So if you would like to read more about this, please do. So Jolly was born Louis Joylin West in October of 1924. And not too much is known about him up until college. He was born to a Ukrainian immigrant father and a mother who taught piano, and he was not like super wealthy. He was like lower middle class. Oh, and also I should mention the reason that I know so much about him at this point is because of Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s by Tom O'Neill. I did a book report. On our Patreon.
So you have like all of the knowledge on this.
I'm obsessed with this person.
Here for it.
He was an officer of the U.S. Air Force Medical Service from 1948 to 1956. He attained the rank of major. And it seems like, no confirmation, but it does seem like that they were the ones who actually paid for his medical degree at the University of Minnesota Medical School. He completed his residency at the Payne Whitney Psychiatric Center of Cornell University in 1952. That's a really famous psychiatric facility. I believe Marilyn Monroe spent some time there. Yeah, when she had to be institutionalized for a moment. So, yeah, it's a really famous psychiatric center. In 1954, at the age of only 29, with no previous post-residency fellowship or tenure track appointment, nothing. He became a full professor and chair of psychiatry at the University of Oklahoma College of Medicine.
Well, damn.
He also served as a chair of psychiatry at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Medicine and the UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute. This man had his fingies in everything.
Truly. Okay? And it feels like we trusted him a bit too quickly. All right.
I am only going in detail of like one thing that he did today, but at one point, he helped exonerate 36 different POWs in the Korean War. He was one of the very few people to interview Jack Ruby after he assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald. He was appointed by the court as a brainwashing expert during Patty Hearst's trial. Yeah, I'm telling you.
He's everywhere in all of these important moments. Oh, my God.
He participated in an American Psychiatric Association panel on cults, wherein each speaker received a letter threatening a lawsuit if Scientology was mentioned during their testimony. And Jolly was the only one with the balls to call them out and straight up say Scientology is a cult and Hubbard is a quack.
Well, love that. Here for that.
So for all intents and purposes, Louis Joyland West should go down in history as a great doctor, a brilliant psychiatrist, and someone who saved the lives of countless people.
Uh-huh.
Until.
Okay. Until. Okay. Okay. I was like, what are we about to hear? Okay.
Until the mid-70s, when the LA Times revealed the existence of MK Ultra. And the government ended up launching three separate investigations into this super secret CIA program. And we found out just how fucked up MK Ultra was.
Okay, okay.
I'm not going to go in the deep deets because we've talked about MK Ultra on the show before. But just in case, you know, you haven't heard that episode, MK Ultra was essentially a CIA program that was so secret. Most people in the CIA didn't even know it existed. Fewer than half a dozen agency brass were aware of it at any point during its 20-year history.
So wild.
The government was experimenting with LSD and mind control on United States citizens, all unwittingly, meaning the people they were experimenting on didn't agree to it or know that it was happening. These experiments included electronic brain stimulation, sensory and sleep deprivation, induced pain, induced psychosis, finding ways to cause heart attacks, finding ways to cause cluster headaches and migraines, severe neurological dysfunction, and much more. When the LSD didn't work, they used hypnosis, ultrasonic vibrations, and radiation poisoning.
It's so... I just get, like, angry all over again when I hear about it. I'm like, I cannot believe.
Yeah. Jolly West has some of the clearest and most nefarious ties of any scientist to MK Ultra, as was discovered in his own files, wherein he had a longtime correspondence with CIA's poison expert Sidney Gottlieb. And if you want to know about this piece of work, you can read a book called Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control by Stephen Kinzer. Is the author to learn all about MK Ultra.
Need to, yes.
MK Ultra was nefarious, obviously, because it was torture and that it was conducted on United States citizens. But as I said before, citizens who did not agree to it. MK Ultra, only having 6 or 7 CIA operatives running it, sourced out scientists and psychologists from all over the United States and Canada to conduct this research for them. It was like Cold War era psycho shit. They essentially they caught wind that the Russians were experimenting with a drug that can make people do whatever they wanted. So the United States was like, well, we better beat them to the punch. And
that's how it always was. Like, oh, well, whatever Russia's doing, like, yeah, so are we.
So are we. So they had psychiatrists all over the country stationed at universities, army bases, and prisons, conducting these tests under the pretense of helping people with their health and wellness. It's disgusting. And if anyone's still on the fence about this program, just take a moment to note that MKUltra was inspired by what the Nazis and the Japanese did in concentration camps during World War II. So much so that they actually hired some of the Nazi doctors to advise them in their research.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Whitey Bulger. Do you know Whitey Bulger or Whitey Bulger?
Yeah. Why do I know that name?
He was a big mobster. Big mob guy.
Okay. Yeah. It was like, I know that.
The movie Black Mass with, what's his name? Johnny Depp. Did you ever see that one? Mm-hmm. He's playing Whitey Bulger. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
Not a nice guy. No one can argue with that. But he was one of the prisoners who volunteered for what he was told was an experiment aimed at finding a cure for schizophrenia, because he suffered from.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was ever officially diagnosed with schizophrenia or if he just had like a lot of the symptoms and wanted treatment for it.
It was suspected. Yeah.
In reality, he was given high doses of LSD every day for an entire year, and they drove him to the brink of insanity.
Of course it did. Jeez.
I mean, the worst part is they were telling him that they were trying to help him, and they were actually driving him crazy.
Like, no one is saying like he was a good guy, but you're just kind of like, man, he signed up for this thinking like, oh, maybe I'll get help for like why I have these demons inside of me. Like, don't know. Then you feel for him in this way of like, maybe he was truly trying to like help himself. And that's so sad and awful.
So sad. But okay, maybe you're okay with these horrific experiments on prisoners and psychiatric wards, but they also experimented on United States soldiers at many Army and Air Force bases in the United States.
No.
Our own soldiers. Which brings me to the absolutely horrific story that I'm going to tell today. This is only one of the handful of cases Jolly West was involved in that now, knowing what he was really secretly involved in, really make you question like how demented this man was. Yeah. This took place in July of 1954. Interestingly enough, the same year Jolly was appointed the chair of psychiatry at the University of Oklahoma College of Medicine, even though he had no experience. Oh, I wonder how we got that job. Was it the CIA? So,
could it be?
Could it be? CBS? Or is it CBS? At this time, he was stationed at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. Okay. On July 4th, at a bar right outside of the Air Force Base, family was participating in 4th of July fun, and two parents who were, you know, associated with the Army in some kind, left their kids outside to play. There were several families there while they went in to grab a drink. When they came out, their 3-year-old daughter was missing. A search party was immediately formed, and they spread out to search for the girl. Within an hour, the group came upon a car parked next to a gravel pit with the 3-year-old child's underwear hanging out of one of the car doors. A local airman named Jimmy Shaver then appeared from behind the gravel pit, shirtless, covered in blood, asking, "What's going on here?" Bystanders said he didn't seem drunk, but he seemed dazed and in a trance and confused. He was confused about where he was, how he had gotten there. He didn't know why he had blood on his body. As they were questioning him, other members of the group found the body of the 3-year-old girl, and she had been savagely murdered. And I mean savagely murdered.
My God. She was three?
Three. And she was sexually assaulted.
I mean, the underwear, as soon as you said that, I was like, this is awful, awful, awful.
Jimmy Shaver was immediately arrested. He was a 29-year-old, recently remarried man with two children of his own and no history of violence at all. He had been drinking at the same bar the girl was abducted from, but he had left with a friend of his who testified Shaver was not drunk at all at the time of their departure. But he did say Shaver seemed like he could be high on something.
Okay. Like just off.
Yeah. Before the cops could take Shaver to the county jail to process him, a constable from another precinct arrived with orders from the military police to take custody of him. Hmm. An Air Force marshal and two doctors examined him upon his arrival, and they agreed he was not drunk. He was actually extremely composed, which they thought was very strange. He didn't know why he was there. He really didn't know even about the girl. He was then booked in county jail for rape and murder. When his wife showed up the next day to see him, he did not recognize her.
No.
According to his testimony at the time, he did not remember doing anything to this little girl. He insisted someone else had to have done it. But after, you know, hours and hours and hours of being there and not being able to come up with an answer as to why he had been found covered in blood with the body, he signed a statement taking full responsibility. He had no memories of it, but he concluded himself he had to have done it. Like, he had to have. There's no other explanation.
Jeez.
2 months later, in September of that year, his memories still had not returned. He did not remember that night, and he did not remember hurting this child. So the commander of the base hospital, Colonel Robert S. Bray, ordered a psychiatric evaluation to be performed by Dr. Lewis Joylton West, the head of psychiatric services at that base. It was his job to decide if Shaver had been legally sane at the time of the murder. Over the next 2 weeks, Shaver was under Jolly's supervision. He was hypnotized several times. He was injected with sodium pentothal to, quote-unquote, clear his amnesia. Sodium pentothal is usually what they call the truth serum in the CIA. After hypnosis and the injection of the drugs, he suddenly remembered killing this little girl, claiming she had brought out repressed memories of his cousin, whose name was supposedly Beth Rainboat.
What?
Who?
That's not a name.
Supposedly sexually abused him as a child. And the story was that earlier that evening, he had gotten drunk and had visions from God telling him to seek out and kill Beth. I would like to note here that every witness testified he was not drunk. And there is no evidence of this cousin existing. Literally, no one ever even looked into it. West testified that Shaver had suffered a bout of temporary insanity on the night of the murder, but he argued he was quite sane now. Only, I guess that depends on who you ask, because there are several accounts of Jimmy Shaver in the courtroom looking like a zombie in a trance, saying nothing, never rising or stretching, or, and here's the biggest point, as a former smoker, never getting up to have a cigarette, even though prior to this, he was a known chain smoker.
Yeah, you would absolutely get up to smoke.
Other people were getting up to smoke.
Yeah.
It was the 70s.
Okay. All right.
An appeals, well, he was found guilty, obviously. And appeals court did later rule he had an unfair trial, but he ended up being convicted again at the retrial. At 33 years old, he was executed by the electric chair. He maintained his innocence for the entire rest of his life. The transcripts of the hypnosis and truth serum sessions were read aloud in court, and I honestly cannot believe this testimony was even included, because almost every question was a leading question. Parts of it were purposefully omitted, like just not recorded, and a huge chunk of it was missing, only picking up when Jolly West asked, "Now you remember it all, don't you, Jimmy?" And he replied, "Yes, sir." Which is some Manchurian candidate bullshit if I 1,000%.
Oh my god.
Now you hear the story and you're like, well, I mean, West didn't have anything to do with it. He was only appointed to work with him after the murder was committed. Wrong.
I'm not thinking that.
Wrong. Jimmy Shaver had suffered from migraines. And they were so debilitating, he would dunk his head into a bucket of ice water if he felt one coming on. And the condition was severe enough that the United States Air Force recommended him for a 2-year experimental program. Of course, there's no record of this program or the doctor that supervised it. And if you search the Lackland Air Force Base archives, you would find that the medical records for patients in 1954, they're all there with one exception. The file for the last names beginning with S.A. through S.T. have vanished.
Weird. That is so, that's just like a crazy coincidence. Like, that is so weird.
So at the time that the CIA was performing MK Ultra type experiments on our soldiers.
Really cool, really chill.
Specifically, people who were being treated with migraines. This soldier savagely raped and murdered a young child and then had no memory of it.
Out of character, out of nowhere, and has no memory of it.
And we put him to death in the electric chair.
He was executed, even though, like, he wouldn't have done this!
Oh my God! Is that not the craziest fucking thing you've ever heard in your entire life?
Insane. Insane. And I'm like, I already don't trust our government, and I always think, like, nothing will surprise me. But I'm still like, what? And then you go and do that, and I say, oh, it's so much worse. Oh, it's so much worse.
Much worse than I could ever have imagined. Yeah.
Also, fuck you, Jolly.
Oh, Jolly was a real piece of shit. I mean, remember when I was like, he exonerated all of these soldiers, right? World War II soldiers.
You made me feel bad for a second because I had just gone like, why are we trusting this guy so quick? Like, why was he put on the board? And then you're like, listen to all these great things he did. And I was immediately like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I will tuck away. Well, he was a great guy.
So basically what had happened was these soldiers came back from, I believe, Korea. I think they were fighting in Korea. And they had said, they basically were admitting to atrocities that the United States had committed in this war, like war crimes, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
So the United States called in Jolly to, they were claiming that these people were brainwashed, that they were POWs, and the Koreans had brainwashed these soldiers to believe that the American military would commit these atrocities. So Jolly was called in to basically de-brainwash them. And he did. He basically he hypnotized them. He probably injected them with some shit and got them to admit that they had been brainwashed. But what probably happened, we can look back. The United States military probably committed some atrocities in the Korean War. And Jolly West was called in to make sure that that information was not the information that got out. That clearly the United States military
going to tuck this away
could not do something so horrible. Clearly, never, these men had to have been brainwashed by the enemy. So he was the guy that they called when they needed someone to, like, admit to something that they didn't do, or potentially commit a crime that they would never commit through hypnotism and drugs. And
oh my God. And like, but he could be remembered as a hero to, like, anyone who doesn't know about this batshit crazy stuff.
America, God shed his grace on thee. That's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll see you when we see you. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
I am a shell of a human. I am a shell. I no longer exist.
Hope you guys have a really good day, and that we didn't just truly ruin your lives. Let's spin the wheel and see how we are ending this episode. ready? Okay. Tarot card.
Ooh, should we each draw one from our deck, or what do you think?
No, for tarot? Let's do Meryl.
Okay.
Give us a shuffle. Give us a give us a vibe.
Okay. Meryl Tarot.
Meryl Tarot.
And it's like all of her movie characters in this deck, but like in, like still in classic tarot. Okay, so doing a shuffle, doing a shuffle. Okay, so this is a reading for you. Mm-hmm. Do you have like anything that you're like wanting to know,
well,
or you want it
you
to
know,
just be like speaking to
you? I've got the promotion going on right now. I'm doing a lot of training. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty stressed out about it. I guess maybe just like, is it all going to turn out okay? Or like, am I going to have a complete mentee bee and quit my job?
All right.
Please don't be the tower. Please don't be the tower. Please don't be the tower.
The Nine
Ooh,
of Pentacles.
Okay. Look at that businesswoman.
I know. So it's Anne Marie from Julia.
Julia?
I know, which I'm like, hello?
She played Julia, though.
I know, but that's in the Julia Childs one, and I don't think that's what this is.
Oh, okay.
Is this a movie that we don't know?
Yeah.
I've never seen this one.
Oh, yeah, because the Julia Childs one's called Julia and Julia.
Julia and Julia, and this just says Julia, and like her name is Anne Marie.
Okay, so. Well, here's
but
the thing.
But it's the Nine of Pentacles.
The Nine of Pentacles is a great card. Love that card. This is what it looks like
in the normal
tarot world.
Not Meryl.
Like, look at her living her best life. But both of these women killing
I know, but
it.
I was also like, I like the way they did it with Meryl. Like, it's very true.
Yeah.
To the original.
Business lady. The Nine of Pentacles is a card of financial success. Well, gosh darn it.
Wait a second.
Wait just
That's
a
amazing.
Minute.
Okay. I'm so happy that I asked if you had anything specific, because I was just going to draw it and be like, let's see if you can apply this to your life in some way. But you literally just said your job.
Your finances are under control, so you now have time to turn your attention to the finer things in life.
Wait, this is the best thing you could have drawn.
Your business is flourishing, and you now have more free time. I don't know if that's going to be true, but
we'll
see.
Yeah. We were just talking about how we only have less.
Wow. Okay. Listen, I will fucking take it. That is the best news.
I'm so obsessed
we
with that.
We really needed that after today's episode.
Oh, my God. After that dark story, like, what a way to end.
What a way to end on my personal success.
I feel like I'm overreacting to this, but I just, like, really think this
is No, it's really exciting when you actually do draw a card that pertains to, or do bibliomancy that pertains to what you're, like, talking about. It's, like, it's an exciting thing. It feels like.
It is.
Even if it's, like, bullshit.
You can
it's
like read into
of
anything.
Like, fun.
Yeah,
like it's a wink from the universe. That's how I'm taking it.
Because honestly, we did bibliomancy once on an episode where like it was nothing matched to our question, and it was one of those like, okay, so this doesn't always work, and this is embarrassing. Tuck that away. So it's just nice when it works.
It's
out.
Just nice when it works out, right? And that's it. Goodbye, right? Guys.
And
we love
all.
You. We'll see you
love
soon.
You.
Keep it weird.
Thank you.